The alley behind Mott Street tasted like copper and wet ash. Pearl turned the corner fast, boots skidding on something slick she didn't want to identify, and the canvas tube with the blueprints dug into her ribs like a second bruise. She'd taken the long way back from the subway tunnels Delancey Street down the Bowery, then a series of turns she'd practiced in her head since she left the unfinished station. Left on Rivington, right on Orchard. The streets emptied as she went, November pressing the population indoors, the gas lamps throwing orange pools on the cobblestones that did nothing to warm the spaces between them. She heard the footsteps 3 seconds before she saw the shape detach from the wall. Pearl stopped. Her hand went to the .32 in her coat pocket. 2 rounds. She'd been counting them since dawn, but counting wasn't the same as trusting. The man stepped forward, gray coat, gray hat, gray face that might have been gray or might have been the light. He carried something long and thin in his right hand. Not a gun. A baton. The kind used by street cleaners. The kind that leaves no visible mark until the skull cracks. "Miss Casey," he said. His voice was the same as the other's, flat, unaccented, the kind of voice that sounded like it had been trained to say nothing important for a long time. "You're carrying something that doesn't belong to you." Pearl's thumb found the hammer of the revolver. "Everything I carry belongs to me." "The blueprints." He took another step. The alley was narrow, maybe 8 feet wide, brick walls on both sides, a fire escape ladder hanging uselessly 3 feet above his head. She could climb. She could try. But the ground was wet, and she'd twisted her ankle twice in the tunnels, and her left leg still dragged when she ran too fast. "I'll give you one chance to walk away," Pearl said. Her voice stayed level. That was her father's other trick, not the shadow walking, but the stillness. When the world tilted, don't tilt with it. Hold your center. Let them come to you. The man didn't walk away. He moved fast, faster than a man in a heavy coat should move. His left hand shot out, grabbing for the canvas tube. Pearl's right hand came up with the .32, but he was already inside her guard, his forearm slamming into her wrist hard enough to make her fingers open. The revolver clattered against the brick and slid into the gutter. Cold water soaked her glove instantly. She drove her knee into his thigh. He grunted but didn't buckle. His free hand, the one not holding the baton, came around in a backhand that caught her jaw and sent her spinning into the wall. The canvas tube flew from her shoulder and landed in a puddle near the alley mouth. Her head rang. Something warm traced her temple and she touched it, coming away with blood on her fingertips. The man stepped over her, kneeling now, reaching for the canvas tube. Pearl crawled, not a way forward. Her fingers closed around the barrel of the .32 where it lay in the gutter water. She pulled it up, aimed at the man's back, and fired. The report was enormous in the alley. Bricks shook. Somewhere above, the proposed terminal site rattled in its frame. The man jerked but didn't fall. The bullet had caught his shoulder, spun him sideways, but his coat was thick and the angle was wrong. He turned, his face finally showing something besides flat neutrality. Surprise, then anger. He raised the baton. Pearl fired again. The second shot went wide, kicking brick dust into the air. The man charged. Boots pounded at the alley entrance. 3 sets, maybe 4. The man in the gray coat hesitated just a fraction of a second, but it was enough. Pearl rolled left, scrambled to her feet, and ran toward the noise. Sergeant Doyle filled the alley mouth, his coat flapping open, his service revolver drawn and smoking. Behind him, 2 patrolmen fanned out, their own weapons raised. The man in the gray coat turned and ran the other way, vanishing into the maze of streets behind Mott. Doyle didn't chase. He dropped to his knees beside Pearl. "Jesus wept, Pearl, are you all right?" She sat up. The world was tilting again, but slower this time. Blood dripped from her temple onto her collarbone, warm and sticky. Her left arm throbbed where the baton had caught her. The .32 was in her hand, empty now, 2 shots gone, 1 round remaining if the cylinder hadn't been damaged by the fall. "I'm fine," she said. It was a lie. Her ribs felt cracked. Her ankle screamed. But fine was the word that stopped the prying eyes. Fine was the word that stayed Doyle's tongue from demanding a physician, from pressing why she lay stranded in an alley on Mott Street at midnight, from probing the blueprints soaking in the gutter at the alley mouth. "Doyle, the blueprints." He was already on his feet, crossing to the canvas tube. He lifted it out of the water, checked the ends, nodded once. "Still sealed. Good." He looked back at her. Who was that? A man in a gray coat. Pearl stood slowly, testing her left leg. It held barely. One of them. Doyle's jaw tightened. How many? I don't know. One in the alley. Maybe more watching. He wanted the blueprints. He was willing to kill for them. Doyle, one of the patrolmen approached cautiously, his weapon still raised, scanning the dark mouth of the alley. We got a lead on the guy, running east on Mott. I can take two men and... No, Doyle didn't look away from Pearl. Stay here with her, secure the scene, I'm taking her to Broome. Sir, protocol says. Protocol says I'm her superior officer, and I'm ordering you to stay. Doyle's voice was quiet, gravelly, the kind of quiet that meant he wasn't going to repeat himself. The patrolman saluted and fell back. Pearl wanted to argue. She wanted to say that Doyle staying meant Doyle seeing the blood on her face, the way her left arm hung at an odd angle, the tremor in her hands that she couldn't quite control. She wanted to say that if he took her to Broome, he'd call a doctor, and a doctor would ask questions, and questions led to records, and records led to Doyle knowing exactly how close she'd come to not walking out of that alley. But she also wanted to live, and Doyle taking her to Broome meant she lived, so she nodded. All right, she said, Broome. The walk to the station house was slow. Doyle kept his arm around her shoulders, half supporting, half guiding, his body angled between her and the street. Pearl kept her right hand closed around the .32, one round still in the cylinder, her thumb resting on the hammer. She didn't let go of it, even when Doyle told her to put it away. At Broome Street, the station house was dim, a single gas lamp in the hall, the front desk empty. Doyle led her through the double doors and down the corridor to the small room he kept for emergencies. A cot, a wash basin, a locked cabinet with bandages and alcohol and things Pearl hoped she wouldn't need. He helped her onto the cot and knelt, examining her ankle. She hissed when he touched it. It's swollen, he said. Maybe sprained, I'll wrap it. Doyle, let me do this. His hands were rough but careful. He unwound the strip of clean linen from the cabinet and began wrapping her ankle, his movements efficient, practiced. You shouldn't have gone into those tunnels alone. You know I told you to wait. I know. And now you're in an alley with a man trying to kill you for some paper. He tied off the wrap and stood, looking down at her. His gray eyes were tired, older than 45 tonight, the lines around his mouth deepened by something that wasn't just fatigue. Pearl, what are you chasing? She met his gaze. The blood from her temple had dried into a crust along her hairline. Her lip was split, she could taste the salt of it. All of it was visible. There was no hiding it from Doyle if he looked closely enough. But he didn't look closely. He was looking at her face the way a man looks at a weather report, noting the conditions, making plans around them, not asking why the sky had turned that particular shade of gray. I'm chasing the truth, she said. Doyle, she reached up, touched the dried blood at her temple, then wiped her finger on her sleeve before he could see. It's nothing, just a scratch. He paused, his hand was still on her shoulder. A scratch that's bleeding through your hair. It'll stop, Pearl stood, testing her wrapped ankle, it held. The blueprints are safe, that's what matters. The blueprints aren't what matters, you are. His voice cracked on the last word just slightly, and he cleared his throat. Listen to me, Vane's people are everywhere. I've had men on Broome for 3 days. They haven't moved, but they're there. And now someone's out in Mott trying to take what you found in those tunnels. You need to come to the station. You need to stay here. I'll get Captain. No Captain, Pearl's voice was sharp. No Captain, no records, no questions. I'm fine. I'll go home. I'll rest. Tomorrow you'll do nothing because you'll be in a hospital bed with a concussion. Doyle's hand closed on her upper arm, firm but not cruel. Pearl, please, let me help you. She looked at his hand on her arm. At his face. At the exhaustion etched into every line of him, the way his shoulders slumped even when he stood straight, the particular weight of a man who had spent too many years watching good people lose and not being able to do anything about it. If she told him the truth that a man had tried to kill her in an alley, that he'd been aiming for the blueprints but might have been aiming for her, that she'd fired 2 shots and missed once, and the man had run and she'd been lucky Doyle would call the captain. He'd file a report. He'd bring in doctors and witnesses and paperwork. And Selah Vane's lawyers would see every word of it before Pearl had finished reading it. The lie formed in her mouth like a stone. smooth, heavy, ready to swallow. "I'm fine," she said again. "Really, just a sprain and a scratch, I'll be all right." Doyle studied her face for a long moment. She held still, kept her expression neutral, let the silence stretch until it became uncomfortable. Finally, he released her arm. "All right," he said, "but I'm driving you home, and tomorrow I'm coming to check on you, and if you're not there." "I'll be there." "And Pearl," he paused at the door. "Whatever you're doing out there, whatever you think you're solving, you're not your father. You don't have to carry this alone." She watched him go. The double doors swung shut behind him. The station house settled into its nighttime sounds, the distant murmur of voices in the cells, the scratch of a pen on paper somewhere down the hall, the steady tick of the wall clock in the main room. Pearl sat on the cot and counted the rounds in her revolver. 1. She touched the blood at her temple, then wiped her hand on her coat before anyone could see. The blueprints were safe. The man in the gray coat was gone, and Doyle believed her when she said she was fine. She stood, tested her ankle, and walked toward the door.